Tom Parry.
Matthew Boyle.
I know in, like, the 12 years we've been doing this podcast, we've, like, jokingly done introductions going, ha, 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 it's been a while. Oh, I've forgotten how to podcast. But it's been, like, 6 months and you genuinely forgot that the show had introductions.
I couldn't recall the exact flow of the beginning. But as you put it there, an introduction, yes. Which is what this is.
Yes, the thing that comes at the start. Okay. Yeah, so it's fair to say this might be, you know, we might be slightly rusty in this episode. So let's just get into it. It's Tom and Matt Attack.
Hello, Matt. How's it going? You all right?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. It's very telling. There's been 6 months or so since we've done this podcast because we haven't got that same improv patter that we once had for our introductions.
Yeah, I'm only just realising that now. No, it's still there, Matthew. It's still there. It's just warming up, you know.
Exactly.
The heating's just turned on, and it's just getting there now. I'm sure we'll be quite toasty soon enough.
Have I broken your brain with Manga Attack? Is that what it is? Is that you were used to being a guest when we speak now, and so you're not?
It's exactly
coming forward and...
exactly it. Yeah, yeah. I'm used to not being level pegging. I'm used to taking the reins. But to tell you the truth, you often were more of the anchor of this anyway, I'd say. I think in the other occasion I did attempt to. But you are the podcaster extraordinaire.
Now I have a mic with an arm. Not that anyone can see it, because I'm not going to publish this, so I need a shave. But it is true, I have a mic with an arm, therefore I am a quote-unquote professional podcaster.
I have my mic stacked on two floppy disk boxes. So I think you're the professional.
I mean, to be fair, I had that Zoom that we were using to record for, like, what, 12 years of this podcast, and it was held together by the end by, like, string and sellotape, so I think it was fine. Yeah. Floppy disk boxes the way. At least you're keeping it on trend.
Yeah, I mean, you're having to wipe the old episodes to record new ones. And then,
yeah, exactly. You know... sometimes forgetting to click record and being an hour into this podcast while we're doing it online and going, oh shit, I haven't recorded anything.
No. But we're here to talk about video games. That's the one that I would always say, you know, to get us back on track. But we're here to talk about video games, right? It may have been a while.
No, definitely. I mean, the thing is, you came with notes, which is something that, let's be honest, you don't...
Well, I've had, what, 6 months to write them. So, and I only wrote them like 5 minutes before we started, so.
I love that this is the stuff that's been eating you for 5 months, so. What are we going to talk about, Tom?
Yeah, okay, so first off the bat, right, I'm going to have a right good moan.
Okay, good. As is tradition.
A few things about video games that I've been, you know, thinking about. And let's start with the top of my list, which is, as you explained to me before the podcast, what they're called is progression gates.
Exactly.
Right? I've experienced this a little in games I've been playing lately. And I often find that progression gates frustrate me and put me off playing. It happened earlier on... Yeah, exactly. What happened early on, well, a long while ago, is I stopped playing Pokemon Legends Arceus, which is now an older game, I think it's safe to say. I didn't play it for ages because I had to catch a certain amount of Pokemon before I could progress the story, basically. And I got to doing that task, and to be fair, I quite enjoyed it. but it did initially put me off, because I want to get on with this. Now I'm stuck, and I've got to work out exactly what I need to do to progress. And sometimes it's easy. Sometimes they sort of signpost what you need to do. Other times you sort of have to work it out a bit. Okay, so what were they wanting me to do now before I can get on with this? So that was the genesis of me talking about this, and that probably... And that dates back a little while, as I was saying. But more recently, it's been Astrobot, which is a short game, you know, in comparison to a lot of others. But I thought, all right, get ready to play these next levels. Yes, yes, yes. Because it's so fun. Yeah. I got really excited then. So I just wanted to see what was next. And it's like, no, you haven't rescued enough bots in the game. So, you know, it is fun to play through the levels. And that's what... However... I just want to play the new levels right now. I just played those other levels. Do I have to play them again straight away?
Right. So my thoughts on this are, obviously, I'm someone who's kind of used to progression gates because I've played so many JRPGs and Metroidvanias over the years. Both of those games are based around the idea of, well, you need to get the ice beam or you need to be level 40 to beat this boss. And so I'm kind of used to progression gates. And you've always hated that. And the thing that I blame for these coming into modern video games and like going into everything, the stuff that we are experiencing now, like Astrobot, is Nintendo, actually. I think the first place I noticed it was the Super Mario games on the 3DS and like collecting stars, or it might have been on the Wii, where you had to get a certain numbers of stars. And I'd imagine that Astrobot is looking at that and going, oh, well, this is how Nintendo does it. This is how they make sure you don't just whiz through 8 worlds in like the space of an hour or two. They make sure you have to go and get stars.
I think there's a way of doing it. Like in Banjo, which I've been playing again recently, Banjo-Kazooie, getting jiggies. You need a certain amount of jiggies to get onto the next stage, right?
Oh, yeah, that's true. It's also in Banjo. Yeah.
Yeah. However, you always manage to get enough jiggies normally just on one playthrough of the level, because the game doesn't hide them so much. That's your main objective, really. Your main objective is to get the jiggies.
Yeah.
So on Astrobot, your main objective doesn't feel like it is rescuing the other Astrobots. It feels like an extra objective. The main objective is getting to the end of the level. But in order to complete a level in Banjo, you need to get the jiggies. That's the main goal. So it's when these sort of progression gates are locked, it's all locked behind extra things that you wouldn't always necessarily think you need to do to progress the game, but you do. So it's implemented, I think, that frustrates me sometimes.
No, that's fair. I mean, it's one of the things why I hate Super Mario 64, why I'm on record as not liking that game, because I thought the whole idea of having to go back in and replay a level and do a different objective and all of this stuff just really didn't appeal to me. And so I'm kind of a bit disheartened to say that hear you say that's in Astrobot, because I think I'll find that annoying.
But then again, I've only experienced it now at this point in the game after completing like 3 worlds, I think. So maybe I'm on the 4th world. It's only now this sort of gate thing has sort of appeared. I don't know if that's because if last time I played it, I was just enjoying the level so much, I wasn't looking for the bots. I think sometimes some people would play the level thinking about that, thinking not running through the level, but playing it very methodically and searching every area for bots. And I think if you do that, you're probably not going to experience this problem in the same way I have. But when you're just enjoying the flow of the game, you know, and you're just going through it and moving forward, you're not always stopping to look around for stuff. So let's compare it with something else which is a bit different, because I was playing Neon White earlier, and that has progression gates, of course, and after completing the first series of what I don't know if it's 10 levels or around about that, basically, I wasn't a ranking high enough or low enough in the case of, you know, it sort of counts down your ranking for some reason, Neon White. So I needed to be level 94 or 93, and I was 97. Just a quick playthrough of the first levels. So, and, you know, so I had to return to those levels and get faster times to get, you know, more medals in order to unlock the next part. But that was immediately after I'd done them, you know. But in Neon White, the objective is to do them quickly. That's part of it. And I think when you first play the game, you're not necessarily up to speed with it all. So you're not necessarily going to just ace them first go. So I thought that kind of makes sense. And I wonder if on the next series of levels, if it doesn't introduce too many more new mechanics, that I'll be able to actually get higher rankings first time round. But yeah, I had to immediately go back into those and replay them. And it wasn't good enough to get silver. I was having to get gold on a fair few to get through to the next level, and that seemed a little bit harsh to me. You have to get a gold.
I mean,
but then again, it wasn't that hard once you know how the game works to do that, and you ended up approaching the levels in a totally different way, not just rushing to get to the end, thinking what is the quickest way to do this and creating a new strategy. So in that way, it's quite different from Astro Bot, because there's a depth to it. But I suppose Astro Bot's the same, is it? You add an extra layer of depth, don't you, when you play through it? Because now you're searching for something. The first time around, you're just getting to the end. And now you're having to think about things in a different way.
Well, I think the thing with Neon White, and why it's never really bothered me in that game, and why I think that game is excellent, is if it's the first time, actually, as we're talking about this, that I'm realising this as we're speaking, so forgive me, this is a threshold, but like, it feels to me that Neon White and the way it does like those things is a very arcadey feel, and it kind of reminds me almost of racing games, and like that idea within racing games, like you would have to, you know, as with Mario Kart, as with whatever, your Gran Turismos or whatever, you need to win races to progress, and that whole game is about moving through those courses with speed, right? I imagine to take it back, there's probably also something around things like, oh my gosh, this is how far video games are from my brain at the moment. What's the Jumping Flash? Like, stuff like Jumping Flash would have had this on the PS1, surely, of like, you need to beat the level in a certain amount of time to progress to the next level.
I can't remember. Yeah. Just part of me just sort of wants to just see the next bunch of levels rather than replay the old ones. But I have to admit that going back into the old ones and approaching them in a different way gave me a certain level of satisfaction and made me feel like, you know what, I know this game now. I'm better at it than I was, you know, only, 15 minutes ago.
Yeah.
So it's something good about it at the same time, but it's that initial feeling of frustration I have. Maybe it's me, as you know, it's just unique to me, but I feel like, do I have to replay the same things? I kind of want to see something new, you know. And quite early in the game, you didn't have to play it for long to be kind of stuck in a limbo and have to replay the beginning bits again.
Yeah, like, I understand. Like, I think that's fair, but like, again, it's hard for me to comment on this because I'm so used to it within video games. And I also think if you just want to, I know you and I have always approached video games differently, right? You were quite content with putting on a video game, playing it for an hour, kind of getting a feel for it and then bouncing off it. For me, I've always loved that wall of challenge, as frustrating as it is to, you know, beat a boss in Mega Man or whatever it is. For me, the mastery of the levels and like trying to beat this stuff has always been part of the gameplay, and like me getting to the next area has always felt like a reward.
I suppose when you think about how older games used to be, you would have to do this all the time, you couldn't save. You know, you're playing Streets of Rage, you'd get so far, you die. You have to start from the beginning anyway, so you're replaying the same thing. But I think perhaps when games nowadays are so long and it stalls you quite early on, it feels sometimes like a way of artificially lengthening the experience a little by saying you have to do this fast in order to get through, or you have to collect this many of this in order to get through. And this can be a problem, I suppose, if the game is relatively short and they're just sort of making you replay stuff. Because we've got used to something different. And that does bring me on to another point, actually, that I wanted to make in this episode, which was how much video games have changed over the years. Game design, the length of games is a lot different than it used to be. Yeah. And I do feel a lot of modern games are artificially expanding their length because, for some reason, people really get annoyed if a game is short.
I mean, they always have.
But then again, you know, I never complained about Streets of Rage or whatever that, you know, Final Fight. You can finish it, but it's hard. But the game itself, actually, if you're quite good at it, it won't take you very long to finish the game. It's actually Streets of Rage 4 is a good example. You can complete that fairly quickly in a couple of hours, maybe, and that's absolutely fine. But some games artificially sort of lengthen the progression a bit. That I don't think Streets of Rage 4 does, because that sort of recognises it's a relatively short game, you know.
Yeah.
They made add-on content for it and such, but it's the experience of playing through it. Just a thought. I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with it, to be fair.
Well, I mean...
Just talking.
I get what you're saying, honestly. I understand what you're trying to say, but I do think it was genuinely a thing. Like, I remember buying games in, you know, in the early 2000s or whatever, and playing it, and you're like, oh my god, I completed this game really quickly. Like, I just spent 50 quid on this at my birthday.
And then
money.
You'd be disappointed, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's certain games that obviously have that expectation built in, right? Like something like Street Fighter, you know you're going to beat the game relatively quickly while playing as one character, and the whole idea is, oh well, I play through as different characters, I unlock characters, I do whatever. Like,
yeah, it's more about the experience of playing it. The experience playing it is just so nice. Like, for nice is a great word, but I just love playing 2D fighters myself, just because they're a pleasure to play for me, and there's something about the way they feel to play. And 3D fighters, but that I get my kick. It doesn't matter if I don't complete the game, just if I do a few fights. I mean, I've had my pleasurable experience, you know.
Yeah, no, so
I understand. They're a bit of a different thing, but yeah, games in general have changed a lot, and they haven't changed a lot. But I think we can all agree that on a technical level, things have really progressed, and it's brought its fair share of annoyances along the way, which is the second point on my list.
Okay, go on, get on your soapbox again.
So, one of the issues I face a lot, and it goes back to liking sort of more punchy games that pick up and play, is having them all available to me depending on my mood. Because as we've talked about, I like to dip in and out of things, and even fighting games now. We're talking nearly 100 gigabytes install, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you run out of storage space on consoles relatively quickly. Even now with a expanded external memory on the PS5, I have got several, to be fair, I've got several longer games saved on there, like Red Dead or what else? Last of Us 2 or Horizon Zero Dawn, or all these things are sitting on my hard drive.
Yeah, well, right. So before you even get into this argument, I'm going to say the thing that I've said to you for God knows how many years on this podcast. Just delete stuff and redownload it.
If I wanted to play them, I'd have to reinstall them. So that just puts me off deleting them, because I might really feel like I want to pick up and play that game. And I like how it used to be. Now, this goes back. Xbox 360 might be the best time for video games, because you didn't have to install stuff.
Yeah.
Right? You could if you wanted to, but you didn't have to, because it could read off the disc fast enough. You know, it wasn't on a Blu-ray, it was on a DVD, I guess, a certain type of DVD. So so it could read off the disc. I miss these days of just that. I mean, you've got it with Switch, to be fair. You know, you get the odd update on Switch games. But just reading the thing off the disc without having to install. Because the whole install thing is a pile of... Because it takes forever.
It does.
A lot of the time.
It is very long.
You know, you have to wait. You get the game. I have to wait to install it. I mean, everybody knows this. Great. Maybe kids nowadays don't know any different. I don't know. But they've got the Switch, so they probably do know. A lot of kids have used the Switch, and they know how instantaneous it can be to just get a game.
Yeah, but they still know that they need software updates and stuff, right? I still see every year at
Christmas. Yeah, there's software updates, and there's these first-time installs, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, software updates can be okay. They don't always take that long unless it's Fortnite or whatever. But these mandatory installs, now, they first reared their ugly head on the PS3, didn't they? And you had, because of the Blu-ray format, it needed to... The same game you play in 360 almost instantly would need a mandatory install. I remember this with, say, Devil May Cry or something like that.
I remember this more... most egregiously with Metal Gear Solid 4.
Metal Gear Solid 4, right. Because that was on PS3 and Xbox 360.
No, it's just on PS3.
Sorry. 4, not 5. Yeah.
Yeah, but like, and 4, literally, they've built in cutscenes for you to like watch TV while it's installing. They thought about the experience, and it's really tedious. It's insanely tedious.
There's a lot of games like that on the PS3. And it's like, now this is a bit of the norm, but they're not even going to the length of giving you something nice to watch. But they are letting you do it in the background, which I suppose is quite nice. Because before, you just had to sit there and stick the screen on, have the screen just with this slow load install bar going through.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's just one of those gripes that sort of makes gaming a little less instantaneous than I'd like it. And then you get these blinking terms and conditions screens that pop up as soon as you put the thing on, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now you have to scroll through them. Before, you could just say, yeah, whatever, I agree, because if I don't agree, I can't play the bloody thing. But now you have to pretend like you've read it by scrolling down.
Well, I mean, this is the same for everything, though. This is using, like, Instagram. This is using Facebook. Yeah. This is, you know, anything digital now. There's so much rights and everything tied up in it. Where it's just, I had to do this with Monster Hunter the other day. You have to sign so many permissions things. You have to open like 3 external websites. You have to install it for like 3 hours. I was just like, okay, cool. It's 11 o'clock. I guess I'll play this game for 10 minutes and I'll go to bed.
Yes, that's a lot of how it goes. You might have the intention you want to play the game. But actually, when you've done it all, it's like you've run out of time and you've got no time to play it.
Exactly. I was very tired killing things.
I think I started thinking about this again because I whipped out Hyperkin Mega Drive clone console just because I wanted to play some Mega Drive games on say the HD telly, because for ease, you know. And I just stuck in Street Fighter 2 and I was playing it immediately. I was like, oh my gosh. It was like a revelation because I hadn't played like a cartridge game in a little while, you know, and it just felt so good.
Yeah.
I sort of just longed for that a bit more and made me reminisce about the N64. Even the Dreamcast, you didn't have to install stuff. The and the load times weren't bad on the Dreamcast. Actually, going back and checking out some of these consoles, the load times weren't that bad on even the PS1 sometimes.
No,
a lot of things. You sort of get this idea that it used to take ages, but now we've experienced these sort of slower situations where you have to install the game first. These load times don't seem as bad as they used to.
Well, I mean, to be honest, the load times were never really that bad for me anyway. Never really any games I played where I was like, oh my gosh, this is really egregious. Sometimes on PS2, some of playing through Yakuza 2 especially, which I think was one of the more graphic-intensive games and like a later PS2 game, some of the load times there were a bit like, ooh, this is taking a whole minute. But also, I grew up with a Commodore. Like, I've literally experienced the life where you had to plug in a cassette, type in a command prompt, go outside to play for 20 minutes, and then and come back and play Rampage.
Yeah. So that, I'm glad we don't live with that anymore. And that's one of the things about gaming in the past which was really bad and... not everything did it, but at that point in gaming, things weren't so good. So it got me thinking about what point in gaming did it get to the point where it was perfection before games started demanding the mandatory installs and stuff to be able to run at a good speed, you know. So I touched upon it today. I think the 360 Wii period for me perhaps was because you were getting games of a certain level of quality, especially on the 360. You know, with really astounding graphics and the game itself had just gone to the next level. You could argue it happened in the generation before, but I just think that extra boost sort of with 360 and its instantaneous sort of gameplay sort of was a bit of a sweet spot. But at the same time, you had faulty consoles. You had real bad technical problems with that console.
Yeah.
If the 360 hadn't have had so many hardware issues, that thing, you know, was near enough perfection to me.
Mm-hmm. I did, weirdly, right, I saw a 360 yesterday when we were in IKEA. Like, they just had a 360 as part of, like, a TV stand setup to be like, hey, you can put one under you. And I just sighed. I was like, oh, 360.
Those were the days. But then again, you know, maybe games weren't running at the frame rates, you know, that they run at now. Maybe they were chugging a bit on the 360. And that's something we take for granted today in a lot of cases, that games run a lot better than they used to. It's never been something that's really irritated me, because way back when, you know, slow down was like, I used to think it was cool when a game slowed down. I was like, oh, this is like a slow motion bit. You know, it was annoying in GoldenEye, perhaps, when there was too much smoke on the screen and you couldn't really tell what you were doing. But when, like, a shooter slowed down for a moment.
Yeah.
Like a side-scroller or a top-down shooter, I never used to mind that. I used to think, oh, wow, that's kind of cool. It's a bit different.
Yeah, I mean, I never really thought of it that way. You've just been Matrix-pilled. Your brain was like, oh, slow-mo! No, like, you would have thought that more people would have tried to do something with that kind of thing, right?
Just I suppose like, that happens a lot, actually, in games. Say, like, John Stranglehold, you know, and the slow motion with the jumping around with the guns. And there are games which you slow down speed in order to get... I mean, Red Dead, even, when you use the Deadeye thing, you're slowing stuff down so you can aim better.
I mean, the entirety of Superhot.
Yes, a game all built around that idea. So, I think what I was trying to say there is games have changed a lot. In some ways good, in some ways bad. But in order to get those good stuff, we're having to sacrifice something else. You know, and having to have these really great fast-loading games nowadays on PS5 and Xbox Series X and all. You know, we're still having to do these big mandatory installs because... That wouldn't work without doing that, you know.
Yeah.
You couldn't instantaneously access that data from a disk.
No, definitely not.
But before you could, and they used to work quite well. So things have changed quite a lot, really. I suppose that's just how it's going to be, but I just wanted to sort of speak a little bit about that.
No, that's fair. I mean, I think... Yes, video games have changed, but I think like you still have this stuff from like indie developers, right? I think that's why the Switch has all of this stuff less, is because smaller studio games aren't really thinking about, well, I want you to be able to access this giant open world at all times and be able to go wherever. Like, they're not thinking about the seamless integration of a giant map, because they just don't have the scope to be able to create those kinds of things, right? You're not going to get them going, oh, what if you, when you're playing God of War, you're squeezing yourself through a crack in a wall and we're actually using that to hide the loading of the next area, because they don't need to. You know, you're going from room to room, or, you know, you're going from level to level or whatever it is.
Resident Evil used to use it to great effect, didn't it, with the opening doors, the sort of feeling of anticipation as you would open a door. It actually became part of the experience.
It did. I mean, that, like, when I think of that game, I think of the, you know, the opening doors, and also the moments where they really played with you in stuff like Resident Evil 2, where you'd open a door and like dogs would come through or something like that, and you'd be like, oh god,
because you've just had nothing for a moment. They've used that sort of moment of peacefulness to actually then create a scare out of it.
Exactly. It's great, but like, you know, We're gonna see less and less of that, I guess, as time goes on, because they don't really need to think about it, right?
No, but what has actually put me off getting some games in particular, and it sort of moved me more towards, you've mentioned sort of arcade style games, don't and so as I realise they're the kinds of games I love more than anything else, you know, the kinds of games I like to play the most. I don't tend to buy these big open world games. There's been ones that have interested me, like that Star Wars Outlaws interested me. But then again, I've not got room for it in my hard drive. I've got all these other open world games I haven't played properly yet. You know, I would just not buy the game based on the fact I haven't got the storage to keep it there just in case I want to play it. You know, because also those games are a massive commitment. And as you say, I'm not a person who tends to sit down for hours and then play in games. I've still got Cyberpunk 2077 on my hard drive because I like the game and I might want to play it again sometime. But I have completed it, but I just leave it there because if I ever want to play it again, you know, I can't do it instantly. So I'm my own worst enemy, really. I should just delete it so I can make room for something else.
You should, but like honestly, for me, right, I have a different mentality to this than I used to. I generally have stuff on my hard drive that I'm like, right, am I actively playing this game? And there might be stuff like, there's some examples of this recently where I've had stuff kicking around. Metaphor, Ario Fantasia. Like I bought that when it came out because I was like, well, I want to support them releasing physical Persona and Persona adjacent games. So I bought it, I installed it. But I didn't start playing it. I played the demo. I was like, well, I've got this on here. I want to start playing it. But I'm like, no, now is not the time. I'm going to delete this and I will reinstall it when I need to play it because I had to make space for Monster Hunter.
Yeah.
And I think it'll be like that. I think it'll be having slots for games that I know I like to dip in and out of. Like recently, I had to re-download Fortnite because they put Cowboy Bebop stuff in Fortnite. And I was like, well, I've got the V-Bucks. Of course,
oh, I got Spike.
Why would I not? But it's for me. There's an interesting thing about it because I haven't upgraded the storage on the PS5. I just have the terabyte it came with.
Updated it, I still feel like I need more space, and I don't feel like I should have to buy bigger storage now because then I've got a useless piece of storage media that I don't know what to do with.
Well, I mean,
it's not useless. You could use it in something else, I'm sure, because it's compatible with, say, PC or whatever, isn't it? A lot of these storage.
Yeah, yeah. I think you can also, with the PS5 storage, I think you can also, there are kits you can buy to make it an external drive, so you can just plug it in also.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I think I've seen some stuff like that. You should have a look into it.
Rather than do that, I've just decided not to get big open world games.
Well, I mean, I think that's fair, but I'm also just like, well, the amount of games I play these days are relatively limited. I don't really even buy that many games anymore. No. And so for me, it's just like, well, this is a conscious choice to be like, well, I'm done with this game or I will pick up this game another time is the thing with me. It's like I look and I try and manage the storage space. Right now, Tom, because of this healthy attitude to me deleting games to install new ones, I currently have 200 gig free on my PS5.
Wow.
The world is my oyster. If I wanted to download, if they announced Hades 2 is coming tomorrow and it'll be like 3 gig, I just install it. Don't have to think about it.
And then the worst thing is, though, when you think you've got it all sorted, you've got everything installed on there you ever want to play, you've got your two hard drives, like my Xbox One, the two external hard drives plugged in, I've got everything I ever need, perfect, accessible, and then they'll hit you with an update. Master Chief Collection will say it needs some sort of... And then you're screwed. You have to start deleting something else, even when you thought you had it all right, all accessible already, then the updates rear the head and that's it. You messed up and you have to rethink the whole thing again. So the thing is, don't have lots of games, don't have them all installed, because it's just a massive headache. And but when you have cartridges, or you have older consoles, like the 360, like we've talked about, the Wii or whatever, PS2, you don't have that problem, because you have the physical library you put in. The storage isn't on the console itself.
Yeah, but the issue then with that is you have the physical storage that you need to actually house these cartridges.
You have real physical storage, yes. Then you have that problem as well. So wherever way you look at it, you're either dealing with the internal digital storage or you're dealing with the actual idea of storing physical games in your...
Well, I mean, I say this in front of a giant wall full of books, but I'm just like, well, for me, the answer to all of this is just you don't need to accrue all of this stuff. I think we, as collectors, and I think we as people who enjoy collecting and the art of going out and buying video games or manga or books or whatever it is that you collect, I'm just throwing myself under the bus with this one. It's just like, well, you don't need to have all of this stuff. Like, I think as I'm getting older, I'm just realising, like...
Oh, well, because you can't take it with you.
Exactly, you can't take
and
it
someone's
with you.
You've got to do... When you're dead and gone, something's got to be done with all the stuff. And you just leave it to someone else to have to sort it all out.
Well, I've been thinking about this since we were in... we went to Vorbasa Market, which I've mentioned many times on this podcast, which is a big Danish market here. And there was just, like... oodles and oodles of comic books. I can't remember even if we did the podcast around then, but I literally bought more comics than I could carry because they were just hardback comics that were very hard to come by or ones things I wanted to read. And they were 3 for 100 kroner. And I was like, I'm not leaving these $50 deluxe hardback DC editions of Grant Morrison books here for when they're 3 for 100 kroner. I'm going to buy all of these. I'm going to get all of this stuff. And it turned out that one of my colleagues who I text to be like, you need to come to Vorbasse. They literally have like every Marvel comic ever published for 3 for 100 kroner. Mm-hmm. And he got to talking to the guys and he's like, oh, well, someone passed away in the local area and his wife didn't know what to do with them. We're not particularly interested in comic books. We made her an offer and we're just getting rid of them. And I'm like, oh, this is going to happen to everything, isn't it? Like, this is the feature of all of this stuff.
Well, it doesn't really bear thinking about too much, but there is a reality about that situation
there
of
is.
Having a lot of stuff.
But I'm also I didn't, honestly, I didn't intend it to get that morbid, but it has been on my mind because of that. But like, what I'm trying to also say is, people don't have that much time, and like, we're not, you know, we don't have multiple, you know, weekends to just do nothing as we're getting older and, like, you know have other commitments.
A lot of the way I look at it is I like inviting friends over to play video games with them.
Yeah.
And what I really like about having a large collection is your friend might say, oh, I really love this game. Like, I've had it with Claire's sister. She'd come over and say, there's a game I really loved. And it's like, oh, you've got it. Oh, it'd be great. Oh, and they play it again. And it brings them so much joy. That like even like having an old PC with The Sims on, which now isn't a thing because apparently you can get Sims on Steam now, the old one.
Yeah, you can.
Full of bugs, apparently, so I haven't tried it.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But having the old stuff and sharing it with other people, I find is really the best thing about it for me. It's not all about having them for myself. It's having them because other people might come around and say, oh, there's a game I loved. Oh, yeah, I've got it. Let's play it together. And it's happened. It's a friend I have recently who's like really into Mega Drive stuff. We're playing the old Streets of Rage and stuff. And, well, I've got it. And it's great. And that actually did make me recently actually think of a logical solution to this. And I bought a Mega Everdrive. Not because I intend on selling all my physical Mega Drive games, because I'm still that kind of collector mentality.
I would say I've thought about that, but then this is me repeating something I've said in this podcast for 3 years, so I'm not going to.
Yeah. But I got it because there's certain games that I know he'd like to play that I can't afford, like Streets of Rage 3, you know. And he likes to play it on the actual controllers. So it also made me think about getting something more that, because he could play it on a compilation on 360, right? Play L Streets of Rage, which I can do, or any other compilations. But there's something about playing it with the controller it was made to be played with. The whole experience is totally different, and I've been thinking a lot about that lately, about the experience of the input device that you use and the satisfaction you get from playing the game. The nostalgia as well. You know, it takes you back. The game was designed for that type of controller, so it just feels better.
Yes.
With that D-pad, with those buttons.
That will give you.
Yeah, it's made me purchase a few of these, a couple more of these, what are they called? 8-bit do M30 controllers to use wirelessly on the Hyperkin Mega Drive console I've got. And that has just done it.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, I'll get a Bluetooth. You can get a Bluetooth one for the Switch. Perfect. I'll get that so I can play like Sonic and other fighters with this controller because it feels right for them. And I think Switch is actually a really good platform for having multiple styles of controllers because it uses Bluetooth and it has a lot of compatibility. Now, other consoles use Bluetooth as well, of course, but they lock out compatibility. You know, like PS5 or PS4, you know, you have to have controllers that are made specifically. You can't just get an 8-bit do controller and connect it to your PS5 or Xbox or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So the Switch, for different types of controllers and for retro games, is a really good option. PC as well, of course. You can attach anything to a PC. Also, yeah, using your old consoles, getting the Bluetooth adapters for your old consoles and being able to play them. I think you can probably get Bluetooth adapters for Xbox One or Xbox Series and PS5 that will let you do that.
Probably.
But, yeah,
I wish they just had a thing, right, that would, you could plug it in via USB to any of these consoles and just, you know, the way they used to do for PC, where you could buy, like, almost like an input adapter for a PlayStation controller, like an old PS1 controller or a, you know, a SNES controller, where it would just be the female side of that input and you could just plug it in via USB. That's what I used to do with Super Nintendo emulation.
Yeah, it's a shame it sort of locks out because I've got an Xbox, original Xbox, with loads of Super Nintendo games on it, but there's no easy way to get a Super Nintendo controller on that.
Yeah.
You know, to use a Super Nintendo. I've got an adapter that adapts the controller port to a USB, but it doesn't recognise the controller by USB.
No.
Because that's just the way the hardware's built. Yeah, I feel that the Switch and the Bluetooth thing, and they actually does have USB slots for receivers, and receivers work in the Switch, as they don't work. The same receivers won't work in, say, some of the other consoles. The controller. I've got so many controllers for a reason, and it's because I think using the right controller for the right game is a really important...
No,
it's
I understand. As someone who genuinely, like, I will go to flea markets now. I will generally not buy games as much anymore. Unless it's something, obviously, if I see, I don't know, a very rare Game Boy game for, like, 50 kroner, I'm going to buy it. I can't help myself. I know in my brain, I'm just like, oh, there's a 50 kroner copy of Darkman. I need it. That is, I do that, but, like, genuinely speaking, it'll be controllers I pick up. If I see limited edition PS3 controllers I didn't have, if I see like really good condition Super Nintendo controllers, if I, heaven forbid, I find a really good Master System controller, I'm going to buy it in a heartbeat. I'm not going to mess around. I'm just going to grab it. Like,
you know what I recommend with Master System? The Retrobit Mega Drive USB, with the USB receiver, that because it's got the same port on Mega Drive as Master System. Using those on Master System, great. Because the Master System controller... as nostalgic as that thing is, I don't think it's necessarily any better as a controller. I mean, the feel of it, so that's the most important thing. There's a nostalgic thing about using the controller that came with the system. If the controller itself actually isn't all that great, as I think we have to admit, the Master System controller isn't actually that great.
Hey man, I don't have the same skin in this race as you do. I don't have like the nostalgia for the Master System because I got into it much later.
Yeah.
But there's just, I don't know, there's just, again, as you're saying, there's just something for me about how that D-pad works on that system that I find...
On the Master System?
Yeah, the Master System, that I find kind of enjoyable. But I also feel that when I plug a Mega Drive controller in, which I've had to do because when I first got the Master System, my Master System controllers I got with it were crap and they wouldn't input properly as Master System controllers
do. Well, I have
to
plenty Master System controllers that don't work,
Yeah, no, tell me about it. Like, it's one of the banes of my existence. But the thing is... I don't like playing on the Mega Drive controller because there's the extra button, and I've always got the urge to hit the extra button.
Oh,
really?
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm playing with the 6-button Mega Drive controller on the Master System, which does seem like somewhat overkill.
You heathen.
But that's one of the classic controllers for me of all time, the old 6-button Mega Drive. Also, the Saturn controller. And this 8-bit to M30 is sort of like the modern equivalent of the Saturn or the Mega Drive 6-button controller. It is that. And that is, and also it's got very nice curves on it, so it's a joy to hold.
Okay.
So the controller is making me want to play games more because I get to hold this controller while I play it. And if the controller's suited to the game, it's absolute pleasure. I don't actually like the PS5 controller very much, I have to admit, in the hand.
Okay. I like the PS5 controller. I think the PS5 controller is nice. I actually recently...
I prefer PS4 controller in the hand.
I mean, don't get me wrong. If you're going to go PS4, PS5 controller, we've had this debate before. I prefer PS4 controller. I like the PS5 controller, though. I actually now have... I bought it at Christmas. I treated myself on my birthday. I bought the 25th anniversary one. Or 30th anniversary. So I have the nice PS5 controller that looks like a PS1 controller.
Yeah, yeah. I've got the PS4 version of that. Yeah, I think you also have that.
I have both now. Yeah, so it was just like, it was fun to me to pick that up because I've been using the same PS5 controller since I got my PS5. So I was like, oh yeah, this felt so nice out of the box. This nice little like rubber grip and this finish and everything else. But that's all worn out now because I've used it so much playing.
I love a rubber grip. Oh, the Xbox Sports. I think they call it in the Xbox One sports pads or something.
Yeah,
there's certain Xbox One controllers with rubber grips on the back. And, ooh, that's a sexual
experience.
They're
going to age super well. They're going to be all slimy.
Oh, yeah. I've had to do this recently with all my PS4 controllers, get covers for the sticks because they've all become slimy and sticky on my PS4. Mm-hmm. The sticks are sticky. So I've had to... But these covers are great. You know, I got these cheap ones off... Amazon, I think. Have you seen? I'm just showing Matt something.
This is the thing, right? Like, I kind of scoffed at these when I first started seeing them because I was like, oh, this is going to feel annoying to go on top of the thing. But, like, yeah, no, I feel you. I've got a couple of, especially all my 360 controllers are like this now. Where admittedly, I've not really gone to play my 360 in a good long while. But, like, whenever I'm siphoning through a box of controllers to find something I want or a cable, I'm like, oh, God.
Oh, yeah, it's horrible when you discover a controller that's melting. I had something, a fighting controller, it was a Street Fighter one, I think it was a Mad Catz one for PS3, and the whole back of it was this rubberized thing, right?
Ooh.
What I did was I sanded the whole thing down to get rid of all the rubber bit of it, so it's just hard plastic, and it's really good. It's really great to play with now. I was playing... Capcom vs SNK 2 on the PS3 because it's got the PS2 one you can download with that controller, and that gets me with PS3 PlayStation fighting games, right? They don't have a controller that works across PS3 to PS5. You have to get a unique controller a fighting controller for every blinking system.
Yeah.
Now that annoys me. I've had to get this. This is great. This is the. I think it's the Power A fighting controller, which is based on the Saturn controller. That's I'm showing
that's
Matt
really
the.
Cool.
Yeah, and so I wanted this as well, the option to do this on PlayStation. You can't use this one. You can't use the Xbox One on PlayStation, although you can use the Xbox One on PC, even though it's just a USB blinking controller.
Yeah.
So I had to get the PS4 version of the same controller to enable me to have a good fighting controller for PS4 because all my PS3 ones don't bloody work on PS4.
Yeah, I know. I feel you. I too have suffered this indignity of going like, oh, well, I've already got these controllers. Why would I need to do this?
And that's because the actual controller isn't good enough for fighting games. The actual, it's fine, the PS5 controller. I can play Street Fighter 6 with it, but I'd much prefer playing Street Fighter 6 with a controller like, you know, with a really nice D-pad that's like a Saturn controller.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Sorry.
It's okay. Right.
Is it all the things that have been boiling up inside of me about video games that I wanted to get off my chest? This is my therapy.
I'm glad that we could offer you this soapbox you'd stand on, this padded room of safety that is Tom and Matt Attack. You just let it all out, Tom. Just let it all out.
I feel a lot better. I feel a lot better. My pain?
I do. Are you going to go sit in a room and listen to Linkin Park because you like their hardcore vocals with emotional melodies?
You can call this therapy session or something if you want to name this podcast. But
I will, but, you know, realistically, though, Tom, should probably call this episode something else because we haven't talked about it yet, but there's a reason we haven't done a podcast for nigh on 6 months. It's because we've both been very, very busy people. Obviously, I went off and started another podcast and I didn't realize how much of a time commitment that was going to be. But also, like, as you and I kind of talked about on one of the episodes of Tom and Matt Attack, probably about this time last year, you and I don't buy and play that many video games anymore. And so as hosts of a video game podcast, despite, you know, the minor grumbles that you just had to unleash to get.
I wouldn't have a lot more to talk about because I haven't been picking up a lot of new games recently. Yeah, there was a time, I think, when we were both, you know, very frequently playing new games. And yeah. I don't think, I mean, I'm just playing Neon White now. Do you yeah. know what I mean? Games been out for ages. There's so many games that have come out that we've never even mentioned. And this is because we don't play as much as we used to. And probably also because we all, both have very large games collections already.
Exactly. And like, I feel, I honestly, right, having not bought games for a long time, and admittedly I now buy more manga, which is, you know, fortunately my wallet doesn't.
Well, you know, your money isn't never ending, is it? You know, your focus is on the manga, so you're not going to buy so many more games. Yeah.
No, but it's also just like a time thing, right? Like, I find it hard to do all of the reading of like manga and stuff I want to, but also, you know, going out, having fun, spending time with my wife, or like all of the other things outside of that podcast. Mm. It just feels harder and harder beyond me, like playing like 10, 15 minutes of ZZZ a day or whatever game I'm on at the moment. Like I said, I bought Monster Hunter last week when it came out. I've played 10 minutes of it. I literally built, I made my character. I spent a lot, I probably spent like an hour because I probably spent 10 minutes playing the actual game, probably 50 minutes in the character creation, making like a really cool looking samurai dude, and then I couldn't play with a longsword. Ah, the sight.
And if you could just not have to install stuff for, you know, yeah, exactly. Then but you would have had more time with it.
I still would have faffed around for 50 minutes to the character creator, though, Tom. I'm not going to lie, it's fun. Yeah, generally speaking, though, like, I don't play a lot of games. I could talk to you about the updates in ZZZ at the moment. You're not going to really care, but like, that's it. I haven't even bought the new Yakuza spin-off, the Majima Pirates in Hawaii, yet.
Oh, yeah, I keep meaning to ask you about that. Do you ever watch the series as well?
I did not. I got rid of Prime before I watched it, but now Wheel of Time is back on, so I'm going to do both of them. I'm going
to
watch it.
Just to briefly mention that, I'm like episode four or something, five.
Of like six, and you still haven't finished it.
Yeah, and actually, last time I tried to watch it, I got through half an episode and I sort of lost interest. That is very rare that I would just not watch a whole episode.
But well, because they did that staggered release thing, right? Anyway, we're getting off topic. Yeah, sorry. We should talk about the thing we need to talk about.
Oh, we're talking about, yes, the podcast.
Yeah, we're talking about the podcast. This is a long-winded way of saying that, for now at least, this is the last episode of Tom and Matt Attack. We've done this podcast for 12 years now, and obviously we've had a lot of fun doing it. Tom and I are still going to chat to each other regularly on a Sunday because this is what we've done for like a good portion of our lives at this point. But you know, it's one of those things where we're looking at hosting costs, we're looking at all the things that go into actually producing this, scheduling and all this kind of stuff, the editing times and everything, and we're just going like, well, we don't.
Yeah,
really
Matt's always edited it, by the way.
Yeah, I've literally done it for 12 years on top of the other stuff. Yeah. Like, even when I was doing like biographic stuff weekly, I was still editing a podcast.
Yeah.
At the same time.
Yeah.
You know,
he's a dab hand at it.
Again, professional podcaster.
But yes, with the other podcasts, you've got to edit as well. Yeah. And the amount of times we actually get together to do this is in. Talk about games so much, you know, because I think we've alluded to it in the past, haven't we? We've sort of said, well, if we're not playing so many games, what is the podcast going to be? Oh, we're going to talk more about movies and things like that. But I think now with the manga podcast, you're taking up such a lot of Matt's time that it doesn't make sense for us to pay these fees anymore to keep the podcast going if we're not actually recording it. Which,
yeah,
you know, it just feels like right now we have to sort of leave it. Maybe, you know, in the future we might return to doing something like this.
It might be a bit different, I don't know. And honestly, if we can figure out, obviously, like the RSS will stay the same. I'm going to make notes of all of that before we cancel our subscriptions to the hosting and all of these kind of things. But we need to figure out how to make it make sense, because honestly, like, hosting 309 episodes and some bonus ones in between, It's really, really like costly, so much so that we exceeded some bandwidth limit now, and like they pushed it up and almost doubled our hosting price as a result. And I'm sure there are cheaper methods out there of hosting.
But you say for a podcast we only end up doing occasionally, and with Matt's other commitments especially, then yeah, it's not really feasible at this time to continue doing Tom Matt Attack, nor does it make much sense, I say, with us not actually playing as much as we used to.
No, exactly. Yeah. And I think, like, we did this podcast for, like, a year where we would also talk about other films and stuff, and it kind of felt a bit weird to do that because, obviously, like, a large majority of you people who listen obviously listen because Tom and I have chatted to you for 12 years or whatever it's been. But also, like, it kind of felt a bit weird that you got into this listening to video games and then we weren't really talking about video games anymore. I kind of personally dislike that myself with, like, YouTube.
Yeah. So in a way, we could have done that, but it didn't make sense in a way to turn a video game podcast into something else. Now, if we're going to do something else, we call it something else, perhaps. And that's, yeah.
I mean, when I originally said to you, like, hey, I want to do this manga podcast, and you were like, I don't want to do that every week. Like, I don't read that much manga and everything else. So I was like, okay, fine, I'll go off. I'll find my own podcast. Nobody was just like, well, we were even talking about, like, well, should we call it, like, Tom and Matt something else? Like, should it be, and like, an attack would be the video game one and all of this other stuff, and we could just do Tom and Matt Otaku or all of this kind of stuff.
Oh, that, like, was, that was something. Yeah, we were going to do that sort of thing. But I say Matt's reads a lot more manga than I do. I read at a much slower pace than Matt, and I don't collect manga in the same way Matt does. So it didn't make sense for me to do a manga podcast regularly. Now, I have appeared on it because I still do and enjoy manga, but not to the level of dedication Matt's taken it to.
Well, you know, as people will know who've listened to this podcast, I don't do stuff by halves. Like, I go all in on stuff and I try and make the things I'm making the best they can be. And if I wanted to do that, I would have to play more video games. I would have to be actively seek out more time to do that. And, like, right now where I am in my life, I just don't feel like doing that. Like, I like the idea that I can finally languish in a 100-hour RPG or whatever Yakuza 8 is and not have to think about, like, oh, well, I could be playing this, but should I be playing this new game instead? Should I be doing this? Should I be doing that? So it's going
to have something
kind of
sort of new and different to talk about, because you can only talk about Shenmue and Shadow of the Damned and Yakuza for so long.
For it's so a fun long, story. I.e. 12 years.
I'll tell you a funny story. I was in the charity shop the other day and I saw a copy of Shenmue 1. In a charity shop, just on its own. No other video games in this charity shop, I don't think. Certainly not retro games. It was sitting at its own, £15. Shenmue
1.
I didn't buy it. No, I own Shenmue 1. I don't need to buy
it. But why didn't you buy it?
Yes, that's the problem. I think someone else actually was in there, and I saw them finding it and looking on their phone, probably seeing the value to sell it on. The thing is about this copy, though, it had, I think, all the discs for Shenmue 1, but one of the boxes, there's two boxes for Shenmue, because so many discs. One of the boxes was Shenmue 2. So even if you wanted to sell it on, I don't think necessarily you could get the same money for that if the box was the wrong game.
Yeah.
So anyway, I wasn't thinking about it. I thought, you know, there's a copy of Shenmue 1. You know, someone might discover this and have a great time with it. Someone most likely just saw it and sold it to CEX, which is next door. Mm-hmm. But there you go. So that's a little Shenmue story, because we talk about Shenmue. We've done Yakuza, we've done Shenmue. Have we talked about Shadow of the Damned Remaster? I think we have, haven't we?
We did, yeah. In great
length.
Yeah,
it's absolutely fine, despite what you might have read online about it not being a great version of the game. I've had no issues playing with it.
I was going to say, the unofficial Shadows of the Damned podcast gives it a 10 out of 10, so go play it.
Yeah. I mean, if you haven't played Shadows of the Damned before, I think you can play it back compat on the Xbox if you still got your 360 copy or whatever. But if you haven't, it's a great game. It's great that it's out there again. Urge you to play it. You can even play it on Switch now. So you can take Shadows of the Damned with you wherever you go.
I'll be damned, Tom. That sounds great. Anyways, So, yeah, that, in a nutshell, is us, you know, reminiscing and talking about this stuff. But it's also just us saying, like, okay, well, for now, this feed will go dead at the end of this month. We will try and figure
if you're still listening, I mean, because we've been so absent, I don't know if anyone's still listening at this point. But we'd love to hear from you. If you are still there and you've been waiting patiently for the next episode of Matt Attack and you're listening to this now, we'd love to hear from you.
TomandMattAttack@gmail.com. Email us, please. Like, it would honestly, like, we used to do, like, oh, what did you think? And sometimes you get people respond on Twitter, but not often.
Because we'd reply, you know.
Yeah.
If you message us, we'll reply. Mm-hmm.
We will. Like, if you are.
As long as Matt checks the email account.
No, I will check the email account. That's for sure. Like, the. But, like, if you are listening, if you have got to this stage, if you've been listening with us 12 years, then please, like, honestly, it would mean the world to us this one time, this last opportunity. Just send us an email. We're also going to figure out something. I'm going to download all the episodes and make an archive of them somewhere so it won't just completely disappear from the internet. But, like, just let us know if you are listening, if you have any memories of the show or whatever, because that would be a really nice way to kind of send it off for us mentally. And then, obviously, it would give us your email that if we ever start up something else, we can contact you and be like, hey, you finally did it.
Yeah, very personal experience. And also, I'm sure, speaking for both of us here, we'd like to say thank you to everybody who has listened to the podcast, has taken the time to listen to us chat about video games, and thank you for that.
Yeah,
very much appreciated. I hope you've enjoyed it. We certainly have.
Exactly. I mean, like, we've talked about it a couple of times on the podcast. I mean, like, Tom and I would natter about video games anyway. It's what we did when we lived together. It's what we did when we were working together. It's what we've done throughout time. But, you know, obviously the reason that we made this show is because people like yourself were listening. Thank you for that. Like, it honestly... It
and you know people were listening, don't you? Because you've got all the stats on that. And I was always surprised because we don't get a lot of sort of feedback or anything. Well, I mean, that's fine, but apparently people were listening. So
People asked me multiple times, like, hey, when are you putting out a new episode and stuff?
Well, I did know that Ali listened to it.
Yeah. Good friend Retro Hunter, Ali listened. Sam Axlems on Twitter. There are tons of people who I know actively listened. Jan, my good friend of the Commodore Collector from Denmark. Like, I know there are lots of people who have listened to this podcast over time. Hopefully you get to listen to this before it disappears into the ether. Maybe I should just put, like, explode. Maybe that should be the podcast title. It's just like, it will explode at 27th of March.
Oh, yes, because, yes, well, we're doing this. So people know. Made a real effort to do this as soon as possible so we could get it out there and enough people could listen to it before it disappears.
yeah, exactly.
Like Mission Impossible.
Exactly. Yeah. We'll self-destruct it in 10, 9, 8. Anyways, thank you, everybody, so much for listening to us over these 12 years. It has been a pleasure. Again, you will be able to listen to both Tom and I talk manga and occasionally go off on a side tangent about video games on my podcast, Manga Tack. If you haven't subscribed, that's available all the places you can subscribe to podcasts. And yeah, we're on social media still. Like, even despite my reservations about using the platform, there is still an X account of @TMAcast. Tom is still there, I'm still there, though I regularly am more on Blue Sky now at Magatak Pod there. So if you want to, you have made the transition to Blue Sky, do that, or Instagram at the same place. But Tom, you're Toodlebug500 on Instagram. You've also got a
Tom Parry 11 on X, Twitter.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So those are a couple of places you could reach out to me if you wanted to.
Yeah, please do. Option. Like I said. But email us at tomandmattattack@gmail.com. I think that's if you are floating in this weird, ununited internet now, just send us an email, please.
Or Matt's got your Manga Attack Blue Sky.
Yeah, that's what I said. I've got those places as well, but I'm just thinking, like, if people are on Mastodon or any of these other places that we don't really go on, just email us, because I know everyone's got an email address, so...
Oh yeah. Just let us know. Yeah, so not everyone's on Blue Sky, are they? Although there's a lot more people on it now than there used to be.
there are. I open the app and there's new stuff, not like when I was first started using it and like I would see all of the posts and be like, okay, I'm done for the day.
It's like the beginnings of YouTube. I remember the beginning of YouTube. Wow.
Me too. Okay, cool.
When there wasn't a lot on there, yeah.
Well, there wasn't a lot on there. Well, you know, fortunately for you, dear listeners, there's a lot on this feed for now. There's 309 episodes.
Can you listen, if you'd never listened before, and you probably wouldn't be listening to this if you had never listened before, but you've got 300 episodes to listen to in a few weeks, so get on it.
Exactly. Like I said, I'll archive them. I'll figure something out. If you send us an email, I can also send you a link to wherever I end up hosting that. I've got a couple of options.
Yeah. Officially sponsored by Yakuza.
Officially sponsored by Yakuza, Shenmue and Shadow
El Shaddai. You can mention El Shaddai, maybe.
Oh, El Shaddai. What a brilliant game. Tom, let's not reminisce further.
You can't help it, can you? Reminisce on these things. Tomb Raider. Yeah, that Tomb Raider game.
Tomb Raider game that you eventually
finished. That I was playing
for
years. Yeah.
Exactly. Played for most of the course of this podcast history.
Yeah. It's good, that game.
It is. I like that Tomb Raider game a lot. I didn't like the ones that came after it so much.
Didn't you? Oh, right. Okay.
I thought they were okay. Yeah. I never played Rise of the Tomb Raider. Was that the last one?
Shadow of the Tomb Raider was the middle one.
Rise was okay. I never played Shadow. Yes, but obviously I also extend this thanks to you, Tom Parry, for doing this podcast with me for 12 years.
Well, thank you for everything you put into doing it as well, especially considering you're doing the editing.
It's fine.
I was making the thumbnails.
You were making the thumbnails. We were posting them to...
Do you know what? There's actually a few episodes of Tom Matt Attack on the Blast Process YouTube channel, because there was a time when I was uploading them there as well. So maybe that's some of the old episodes could potentially live there in the future.
They could. Maybe that's what we do. Maybe,
or maybe this one goes up there. I don't know. We'll look into that.
We'll figure something out.
That's youtube.com/blastprocess, which is the website we've been aligned with since the very beginning. It's what I was doing. My video game sort of outlet was through the website and YouTube channel Blast Process. And Tom Attack's been featured there since the beginning, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has, for sure. Oh, crazy. We keep dragging our feet about saying goodbye on this because...
Oh, we are, aren't we? It's because we don't want to say goodbye, really. But it may not be the last you hear of us talking about video games. And if you just like listening to us chat, then you can listen to us chat about manga on Manga Attack on occasion.
You can. You can hear us talking about Pluto at this very...
That's
moment,
the latest probably. One, yeah, Pluto. Yeah.
I went and cut some sticks. I fashioned some horns. I'm going to go take a photo while the sun is still shining.
Oh, great, yeah. So as this ends, you can jump straight into Manga Attack.
You can. You can listen to us talk slightly more structured, but, you know, probably not as improvised. I don't know what I'm even saying anymore.
We got to just end it, I suppose. I think we should probably end it in the way we've ended every episode, haven't we?
We should. Okay. So, if you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you could find it in a variety of places. On iTunes, we are on Spotify,
Stitcher.
We are on
Stitcher,
which doesn't exist anymore, much like this podcast, I guess. Can obviously find us also on Twitter at Tom and Matt Attack, or on Facebook.com. Tom, I'm saying it classically. Oh. Don't point out the flaws. You'll find us on Twitter, TomandMattAttack.com. We are on Facebook at Facebook.com/TomandMattAttack. We are also available on BlastProcess.com. We're on TomandMattAttack.com/podcast. While you're there, give us a cheeky rate and subscribe. Let us know you're listening.
Make sure,
as
cheeky.
I mentioned, to be fair, you can also comment on there if you really want to, but as the hosting will go down soon, tomandmattattack@gmail.com. we throw that email address open to you all. Please write us if you want to say goodbye or thanks for the podcast and all of that stuff. Cool. Tom, I guess I will say the same thing that I've said to you for 12 years, and I will continue to say to everyone out there, be sure, as always, to game on. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
Game on.
Game on! Bye.
Cheerio.